I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega, MLB.com and MSNBC, and welcome to the post-Labor Day edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We usually come to you every Monday and Friday. We're coming to you Tuesday after the holiday weekend. And the college football season began this weekend. And the headliner in college football, as it has been for a long time, is Alabama. And Alabama rolled, to see what I did there, through Louisville the other night. After the game, Maria Taylor of ESPN asked Nick Saban a question that he had to know was coming about his quarterback situation, because Tua Tagovailoa had played great again, and Jalen Hurts had played less than great. And guys, let me just say this, okay? We all know what Nick Saban is doing here. He does not want Jalen Hurts to transfer, because Jalen Hurts is his insurance policy if anything happens to Tagovailoa, who is a star of college football after being around for about 20 minutes. But after Maria Taylor asked the question, he basically said to her, quit asking me that question, as though he thought he could get away with that on national television. And guys, since then, this has been a master class in the BS of the modern media and modern sports, where all of a sudden Saban doing what he was supposed to do, which was apologize to Maria Taylor, is a bigger story than him acting like a jerk in the first place.
It can't Maria, really be surprised.
Just a girl named Maria.
And it's a morning Broadway tune that quick.
This is Nick. First of all, none of us are surprised that he acted that way. He's an imperial person. He's the most important person in the state. He knows it. He can do anything he wants. He's bulletproof. He's Teflon. He's all these things. It's just simply that. It didn't shock me and didn't shock anybody. It was rude. It was discourteous. It was all these things, and it was business as usual. Next question. To me, and seriously, I'm not being flippant here, but I'm saying, really, sadly, that's the reality.
Well, I'm not surprised by Nick Saban's behavior or testiness, although only Nick Saban and a handful of other coaches could act that upset after blowing out a team 51 to whatever. You know, the remarkable thing about these coaches who specify in intensity and live by intensity is that they never, ever, ever, until they're holding up the championship trophy, ever evince 30 seconds of happiness or satisfaction. And then those 30 seconds are over, then they're out recruiting for the next year. You're right, Mike. He's trying to run a game with his two quarterbacks here, and he's hoping that Jalen Hurts doesn't transfer. And by the way, I would probably transfer if I was him, because it's clear that he's made his choice in quarterback. He's already announced that Tua is going to start this week, and if he's not facing a tough opponent, and I think that he'll probably secure the job and cement it in there. And no offense to him, he's a great quarterback, and that's what happens at Alabama. You know, there's a great backup behind a great starter. But if I'm Jalen Hurts, having done everything that I've done in college football and wanting to play NFL football, wouldn't you transfer and go play someplace else, like Shea Patterson's trying to do at Michigan, and get a senior year in that'll vault you into the draft rather than trying to go into your senior year on the bench? And so Saban is trying to prevent exactly what you said, Mike, by playing both guys and giving them both a shot.
But Mitch, you're 100% right. But I have great respect for Nick Saban, what he's done everywhere he's been in his career, except with the Miami Dolphins. Okay. I'm so sick of these big coaches, and that's capital B, capital C. And the idea that they think they can treat people like towel boys in the moment if it serves them. And it was almost as if you look at the look on his face, quit asking me that. Who the hell do you think you are? But what the subtext here is, nothing bad was going to happen between Alabama and ESPN. And Mitch and Bob, look at how the apology was leaked out. Jim Miller, the Boswell of ESPN, finds out about it, and it becomes news, and it is presented then as news by ESPN. But again, somehow the apology is deemed to be more significant than this guy acting like a horse's ass on national television.
Well, only if you buy it, though, Mike. And I agree that it's being pushed out there that way. But here we are talking about it, not fooled. And I think most of the American public is not fooled. They know the difference between seeing something live and seeing real emotions, you know, expressed versus the sanctity of a press release and having your PR office tell you you need to say something. And his, of course, his apology, quote unquote, was, "I need to find a better way to say it." He didn't say I was wrong in saying it. He said, I just need to find a better way to say it, meaning, you know, not on national television when I look like I'm having a snit fit over being asked. And by the way, in case you're listening and you're saying, yeah, but I bet the reporter egged him on, go listen to the tape. Yeah. It is the most innocuous of questions. Yeah. Coach, you just won the game. You know, obviously coming in, the question was about your two quarterbacks. What did you learn about each of them today? She didn't ask who's going to start next week, which is, by the way, what you often get in those press conferences. She asked it the most gentle of way. All she had to say was, I thought they both played well. Obviously, Tua, we scored a lot of points with him. They validated my decision to use two quarterbacks, and I'll likely continue to do that. He could have finished there. It was his temper and his ego that got him into the second and third sentences, not the first.
And by the way, I've got up on the screen here the news story from ESPN about the apology, Mitch and Bob. And this is how it reads. And imagine if we tried to put this in a newspaper, okay? Alabama coach Nick Saban called ESPN reporter Maria Taylor to apologize for his reaction to her question about the Crimson Tide's quarterback situation following their win over Louisville on Saturday night. A frustrated Saban gave a church, blah, 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 blah. But there's no sourcing. All it says is he did it. And I guess we're supposed to know that Jim Miller dispensed this information about Saban. But again, this relationship between Saban and ESPN, it's important to both of them. More important to ESPN than it is to Saban.
Right. Do you think he's issuing that apology if he's yelling that at the Tuscaloosa, you know,
no.
Statesman beat reporter?
They want access to him. He thinks it serves his program by giving them an. So this was never going to be anything other than a rude kerfuffle on his part.
Meanwhile, the larger question I want to ask you two is: would you, if you were Jalen Hurts, would you transfer?
Except that we know how fragile the quarterback position is, okay? And by the fifth game, Mitch, and I'm not, I love watching Tagovailoa play. So I want to see how, and his brother's coming too, and he's a quarterback. But if something happens to him, Jalen Hurts in the back of his mind says, okay, wait a minute. What if I end up playing the last six games and we win again? Does that serve my NFL ambitions more than going and playing at, you know, pick a school, Texas Tech or someplace like that?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to think that anyone is sitting around wishing for your other guy to get hurt, you know, anything like that. But we'll never know how many people in these circumstances have sat around wishing the other guy would get hurt. So the answer to your question, Mitch, I think it probably in the context of the world we're living in now, 30 years ago, 20 years ago even, unthinkable. It wasn't the norm. Transferring is like changing underwear now. It is so much the norm in football and basketball. It's encouraged almost. So I would think that he would probably be wise to think about transferring, weighing the two, if his goal in life is to become an NFL quarterback. And God knows there's enough places out there he could go to, starting
Mike,
with
you
the
raised
place
it.
In Ann Arbor, Michigan.
But seriously,
it's a hell of a question. But the answer is, you know, sadly, if I were him, I'd think about it.
Yeah, you make a good point, Mike. Is the backup on Alabama considered more delectable in the draft than the starter from Mississippi State? You know, because, you know, he much as everybody loves it, and let's be honest, Jalen Hurts, at least the Jalen Hurts that we have seen, can start for any program in the country, any program. There's not one school that he's going to take a back seat to anybody for, not at whatever he is, 25-2 for the nation's best team. But you know, you got to organize your offensive line around him. You've got to rejigger your game just to have him for 1 year. And there may not be a lot of schools that want to do that, who want to get 2 or 3 years out of a quarterback if they can. Is he more promising? If it were the NBA, I'd say stay right where you are, because the NBA just loves to work off of what you could become and not what you've actually done. You know, in fact, if they could draft you as a freshman in high school, they would. But the NFL likes to see, you know, game action, and boy, it's hard to trade off like the possibility that you might be this year's Tua. You might come in a national championship game because he gets hurt and win the thing for the best team in the country, and you know they're going to be there at that, and versus going and, like I say, playing for, you know, Mississippi State or I don't know, you know, Oregon or someplace like that. I'm just pulling names out of a hat. So interesting dilemma to
Mitch
to face.
And Bob, well, I mean, this kid, I call him a kid, this young man is what, 28 and whatever the number is,
yeah,
as the starting quarterback in Alabama. But think how this would play out if something did happen to Tagovailoa, okay? Nick Saban would be a genius for persuading Jalen Hurts not to go somewhere else. And again, I'll go back to how we opened the podcast today. He wants him to stay. He has a backup quarterback with those bona fides as a starting quarterback for him. And no, Mitch, the long answer is if I'm him, I'm going to go somewhere and play. But Nick is going to keep doing this two quarterback thing. And I'm sure he's saying to the kid, listen, even if you play a third of every game, you're still going to be doing that for Alabama football. You're still going to be doing that basically in prime time every single Saturday of this season on a team that may win again. And so it's a very tough call. And you know that there are a whole lot of schools out there that would want this young man to come play for him. And I don't understand the rules as well as I should, but he's got to make up his mind soon, doesn't he?
Four games. Up to four games, yeah. Yeah. All right, meanwhile, elsewhere in college football, and talking about quarterbacks, it was interesting to watch the Michigan-Notre Dame game, the one of the premier Saturday night games. Brandon Wimbush was the quarterback for Notre Dame last year and was highly criticized for not being effective enough as a passer, et cetera. He looked fantastic against Michigan, but it is now becoming similar to another team that plays about 45 minutes down the road from Michigan, the Detroit Lions. Whenever you play against them, you look great. And this is the problem now with Michigan football, which to me, of course, obviously I live in Michigan, it was as big a story as Notre Dame football. And by the way, I go back to when Bo Schembechler and Lou Holtz were coaching their respective teams in Michigan and Notre Dame. And I used to ask Schembechler, why on earth do you open against Notre Dame? And in those years, Notre Dame would often have one game ahead of Michigan. They would play, you know, our sisters of the weak and helpless, and then they would play Michigan, and Michigan would be the opener. They didn't always open on the same weekend back then. And, you know, Bo, with all his bravado, would say, you know, we're strong enough to beat, you know, we can take on the best team in the country first game out. And they regularly got their ass handed to them and sometimes would blow a chance at a national championship in the very first game, which I think has happened again to Michigan. But there's something going on with the Michigan program, who has come back with yet another quarterback, and he doesn't look a whole lot better, Shea Patterson, than the quarterbacks they've had in the past. And this is now Harbaugh's fourth year. And you would have thought, if anything that Jim Harbaugh could do, it would be bring in great quarterbacks. And here we are talking about Alabama with two starting quarterbacks who are amongst the best in the nation. And Michigan can't get off the ground here. And he's 9-9 in his last 18 games. Is Jim Harbaugh in some trouble here at his alma mater?
Mitch, we've talked a fair amount about Harbaugh since we started the podcast. And I have always believed, and we've gone back and forth on this, I don't believe he's going to be there forever. I believe Jim Harbaugh is going to end up back in the NFL someplace. I thought it was going to be a fair fight with him and Ohio State. And look out, Urban Meyer. There's a new sheriff in town up in Ann Arbor. And it simply hasn't worked out that way. And I know he coaches the way he coaches. And I understand the coaches coach to their talent. But a lot of guys make their talent play to his coaching. I am shocked at how pedestrian the Michigan offense consistently is. Now, that may be because he doesn't have a star quarterback. And Mitch, you're right. It would be a lot more interesting to watch Michigan football if Jalen Hurts were the guy behind center instead of Shea Patterson or any of those other guys who came before Shea Patterson since Harbaugh got back to Michigan. But, man, oh, man, you got to score 40 points in college football. Everybody's scoring 40 points in college football. I mean, Bob and I were screaming about our alma mater last year, and they finally started scoring 40 points in college football.
Yep.
You know, we're going to be looking back at this game maybe differently down the road. Let's take a deep breath now. We're indulging in, and I'm going to be part of it, and a little bit of Michigan bashing here. But this game was pretty close. This game wasn't decided until the last 46 seconds when there was a strip.
Because Notre Dame's not great, Bob.
Well, we don't. Let's see. I don't know. I know that Notre Dame. I mean, I'm going to say Notre Dame, in terms of pumping up Notre Dame, if we're going to do it, Notre Dame only gained 69 yards with 5 first downs in the whole second half of this game. So
we know Harbaugh's teams are going to play defense, Robert and Mitch, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
we know that's going to happen.
We know it now because he's got a great defensive coordinator. But your point is well taken about how does offense sputter under Jim Harbaugh.
I mean,
and Michigan, and I'll, because I see more of it on a weekly basis, I'll go in the weeds just a little bit deeper. It's the offensive line. They can't block. And you want to talk about Bo Schembechler rolling over in his grave, talk about not having offensive linemen at Michigan, okay? I mean, it just doesn't go. And Harbaugh, for all his high-flying stuff, he wants to run the ball. That's who he is. He loves to go look at him at San Francisco and other. He loves to just pound the ball and then make some pass. And they can't run. I mean, when a Michigan team can't run year after year, there's something the matter with it. And when he can't recruit a quarterback who is a star with all of his recruiting, you know, sleeping over guys' houses, climbing trees, taking them, you know, playing in his shirt or with his shirt off, all the stuff that made headlines for Jim Harbaugh as a recruiter, you would have thought that he would have had Tua and Jalen Hurts and 6 other guys like him, like a Pied Piper, bring him to Michigan. And he had to take a transfer from Mississippi just to try to plug a hole in the quarterback situation. So it has to do with the talent that he's recruiting as much as anything else. And when you see Ohio State just down the road, just plug and play in, you know, here's another quarterback, here's an injured quarterback. And obviously, he's not doing something that the Nick Sabans and the Urban Meyers are doing in terms of recruiting. And he's supposed to be competing with the Urban Meyers and the Nick Sabans. And right now he's not getting it done. And you know, time will tell on both
Mitch,
of them.
Mitch and Bob, this may be slightly off point, but you guys are way smarter than I am. But when Jim met with Pope Francis at the Vatican, Mitch, did he not ask for the right things? Was there some lack of communications? Would it have been wrong? And I'm a former altar boy saying this, but Mitch, would it have been so wrong for him to ask for some sort of passing attack? Would that have been wrong, Mitch?
Yeah, you know, I was not privy to the conversation, Michael. And I think what goes on between a pope and a football coach stays between a pope and a football coach. So we'll just have to be a mystery on that. But
anyhow, do you think Pope Francis, if Jim had said, could I get a passing offense, might have said, hey, quit asking me that, like Nick did to Maria Taylor the other
Well,
night.
It doesn't help to open against Notre Dame if you're going to go ask the Pope for something.
Okay, Mitch, let me ask you this, because Bob and I talked about this the other day. And I think maybe this question has been answered. The question I asked Bob going into the game was this. Who has more urgency this season, Brian Kelly or Jim Harbaugh?
Well, Brian Kelly just bought himself a lot of time off, given the Notre Dame schedule. And now, Bob, you're absolutely correct. And let me reiterate, you always have to take a deep breath after the first week of the season, especially in college football, because there is no preseason. So this is the preseason rolled into one, and you get a lot of games in week one. And we saw it with the Miami game. I mean, did anybody expect that to be the result? Or the Florida State game, or Virginia Tech? Did anybody expect such a lopsided score? Some teams are fast starters and some teams are not. And nothing is forgiven more in a college football schedule than a week one loss when everything has, you know, comes down to evaluating it in the polls at the end of the year. But the other thing is you get very excited about a big win in your first game.
Sure.
And then you start playing the Ball States. And next thing you know, you got a 6-0 record. And I can't tell you how many teams in football are 6-0 and finish the season lucky to go to the Weed Whacker Bowl, because they end the year with three big games and they end up at 9-3 like a bunch of other college teams. So I don't know about Notre Dame. Everything's heavy on the back end of their schedule, not now, but for the next month, 6 weeks, until they play, I think it's Stanford or whoever.
No, they play Stanford, Mitch. They play Stanford at the end of September, okay, home.
Okay, so 4 weeks.
And then they got to go on the road and play Virginia Tech, which is never a cream puff for anybody. Looked pretty good last night. And so they're definitely going to be 4-0, okay? Ball State, Vanderbilt, Wake Forest, okay? And then Stanford at home, Virginia Tech on the road, and then then Michigan on October 13th.
Michigan State? You mean?
I mean, excuse me, Pittsburgh. Excuse me, Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah. Anyhow, let's not make too much out of the first week of college football
Mike, you mentioned Virginia Tech, and I think we do have to focus on that a little bit. But based on the way that I saw the reporting on that, how awful Florida State looked.
Oh, my God.
And disorganized was used, to say the least. And it was a pretty embarrassing debut for Willie Taggart.
Maybe old Jimbo had, wetted an index finger and saw which way the wind was blowing in Tallahassee and got out while the getting was good. And they did not look anything like a college football power last night. They did not look anything like what we had come to expect under Jimbo Fisher over the past several years. And again, Virginia Tech's always pretty good, and that might be the first interesting those two games back-to-back for Notre Dame may determine how this season is going to go in South Bend.
And for sports fans who may not understand how this works, I would say just take a moment to reflect on the skill and foresight that college coaches and their athletic directors have to have in scheduling 4 and 5 years out their opening three games. Really, a lot of championships are won and lost in that scheduling thing. And as indicated before, sometimes you don't see Nick Saban opening against Auburn. You get my drift. Although Louisville's no pushover, and I give him credit for scheduling it that way. But there are a lot of teams that will not schedule a hard game as their first game, because they say that's our preseason. We get our kinks out. We are not running the risk of a big game one loss and what it's going to do to us in the rankings. There are other teams who say a game, if we schedule a big name team and we can upset them, we can catch them early before they get their feet underneath them, that could catapult us for the whole rest of the season. There's a whole science to scheduling your first three games before your conference games tend to kick in. And nobody ever talks about how smart that is or how much foresight you have to have.
Mitch,
but a lot of seasons are won and lost.
Mitch, but by the way, weren't you surprised, or you may not be surprised living in Michigan, I was shocked to discover that Michigan and Notre Dame hadn't played in 4 years until night.
That was a big story when that rivalry ended. And, it ran out. And I don't know exactly why the people who were in charge of it at the time took it down after so many years. It used to be that was an absolute tradition. Michigan Notre Dame either started the season or was the second game of the season for years and years.
This week, the first cessation in the late 40s or early 50s. This is the stated reason, and I hope we're all sitting down now. Okay, I trust you. Ready? Okay. The Michigan AD felt that he didn't want the game to go on because he thought that the Catholic students of Michigan were rooting for Notre Dame. I'm just giving you what I read. I'm just the messenger.
Really?
We've moved on.
What did Pope Francis know about that, and when did he know about that? That's what I want to know.
No, Mitch, the point you just made is terrific, and of course it runs over into basketball as well, where it's been controversial for 30 years how you schedule in the early season and in December and so forth. But in basketball, they can make up schedules a little bit more on the fly. But you're right, when football schedules have to be booked so far out, and then you assume the team's going to be at a certain level, and one way or the other it changes. No one, you can't control that. It is very dicey, very very tricky in football, no question.
Speaking of scheduling, and before we get to the National Football League, When you looked at the U.S. Open schedule this week, Mitch, did you think that before we got to Federer Djokovic, that Federer John Millman was going to turn out to be the match of the U.S. Open? And that is exactly what happened last night. It is as shocking a loss as Roger Federer has ever had in his career. Round of 16 to a journeyman Australian player, a wonderful guy. If you watch the post-match interview, I don't know how you couldn't be happy for John Millman last night. But it was hot, it was muggy, and you guys know this. There is no timetable in sports for when you suddenly start to look very old. Federer had looked great the other day against Nick Kyrgios, and he just looked older and older and more uncertain. And he started, Mitch, I'm going to do a party shot about him and Tiger, but he started to look like Tiger, missing the putts and the drives he has made to sabotage himself, even in what he describes as a wonderful comeback year.
I don't want to
10 double faults, Mike, I believe.
Unbelievable,
yeah.
Bob.
Double faults.
And an ungodly number of unforced errors.
Especially off the forehand. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, I don't want to put too much into a press conference after a loss because, you know, you're always frustrated. You say things sometimes you don't mean. But more than one eyebrow was raised when he made the comment. By the end, I was just glad to have the match over with.
Oh, my God.
That's not Roger Federer. Roger Federer of years ago would have taken that match, even on an off night, into five sets. It might have lost it. He's not Superman. But he would have taken it to five sets, and he wouldn't have been like, just get this over with, get me out of here. And that's the kind of comment that you start to hear from guys who have played a long, long time and just know when it's over and when it's not, within a match and eventually within a career. And probably no eyebrow was raised higher than that of, the Japanese marketer Uniqlo, who just signed him to a $300 million endorsement deal at age 37 and was being questioned by everything across the board to the Wall Street Journal about why would you give a guy who's about to retire or seems like he's about to retire $300 million. They came back with whatever their answer was. But I don't think their answer was, hey, so what if he loses to a guy named Millman? We still think this is a great deal. So there are a lot of people who are scratching their head about what Roger Federer did last night.
And now we see over the rest of this tournament if Novak Djokovic is ready to reclaim the top spot in this sport after 2 years when he wandered through the wilderness. If he wins, he starts to set his sights on Nadal again in the major. Again, this would be, I think, number 14 for him. Nadal's got 17. Federer's got 21. Nothing like this will ever happen, but boy, oh boy, would I love to see Nadal and Djokovic tee it up one more time the way they did in a magnificent semifinal at Wimbledon.
Djokovic, I never understood, by the way, Djokovic's, as you called it, wandering in the wilderness. He struck me as the perfect cyborg player, you know, the guy who, when his body is going to be at its best, which are these years now, that he would be unstoppable. The mental things wouldn't put him out. He's only 31, and he's 29 when all that started, and that to me was as mysterious as Roger Federer's resilience was magnificent. I kept scratching my head saying, boy, when's Roger Federer going to slow down? Look at how amazingly he's played over the last couple of years. But I was equally astonished by Djokovic's just kind of, I know there were injuries involved and things like that, but he was so...
I think there were problems. Everybody's
you think so?
Talked
off the court
around.
Stuff
there
that,
were yeah. problems in his marriage. Okay, he's now become, he and his wife have become parents. And it was really a loss 2017. Even after he got upset at Wimbledon by Sam Querrey 2 years ago, he still had enough game left to make it to the finals of the U.S. Open that year where he lost to Stan Wawrinka. Then he hurt his elbow, okay? And that was a significant thing. He has drastically changed his service motion. And you wondered if he would ever get back. And then suddenly at Wimbledon, it was as if, Mitch and Bob, it was as if the last 2 years didn't happen at all. It was like he had just stepped back from being the guy who had won four majors in a row and who had, you know, we talk about this all the time. He took on Federer and Nadal in their primes and beat them both. He's got a lifetime winning record against both of the two greatest players of all times. And he's only, what, 32 years old? So he might have 6 or 7 majors left in him.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's playing better as this tournament goes along.
If he can get by John Millman in the quarterfinals.
Yeah. If.
It's a big if. All right, so let's talk about pro football for a second, because there's only about 72 interesting topics. But let's talk about quarterbacks, okay, before we get to the Khalil Mack trade. Of all the quarterbacks right now, and you can even include Tom Brady in this, who's the one who interests – I'll start with Bobby. Bobby, who's the one that interests you the most coming into this season?
Based on the events of the last week, it is Eli Manning, because the Giants, by trading away Webb,
You mean Davis Webb isn't our quarterback of the future with the big blue Bob?
And I can't tell you the name of the itinerant backup on his 112th team that they now have if anything happens to Eli in the first period of the game.
Right.
But that's that. With the high-powered potential of the offense, the potential, I say, of the offense, with the happy Beckham and Engram, who's going to be terrific, and let's see about Barkley if he's going to – but eventually, yeah, that's as much as anybody else right now, Mike. I'm speaking right near your wheelhouse, but, you know, Eli did not look very good last year. They're trying to tell us now that there's nothing wrong with him. He's going to be great again. And, okay, fine, but let's see it. I'm as curious about Eli as I am about any quarterback in the league.
I will try to do as we say with when you get a genie in a bottle and you say my first wish is for 3 more wishes. I would split this in two and say, first of all, I want to see Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, because Minnesota it was such a good team last year with such a weird quarterback situation. Now, we've all collectively, we talk about this a lot, there's well over 100 years of sports writing coverage between the three of us here. I don't think in all of those 100...
Yeah, but 95 of those are Ryan. So,
I don't think in all of those 100 we have ever seen a team... and on the lip of going to the Super Bowl and trade all 3 of its quarterbacks. Yeah. All 3 of its quarterbacks, lose them, and then bring in a new guy at high-priced money and say, no, we're going to bet on him. So that's just that the uniqueness of that situation. And is Kirk Cousins going to be take another step forward and become an elite quarterback? Or is Kirk Cousins going to be the Washington Redskins quarterback that we've seen for a lot of years, who's good and has some good numbers, but doesn't take you to the promised land? And that's a lot to bet on. And my other one would be the Philadelphia situation. Obviously, everybody is talking about that. The game is Thursday night. Nick Foles, again, finds himself starting a game with a shadow of Carson Wentz being injured behind him. And is this going to be one of those situations where, a star is born and Wentz doesn't get the reins back because Foles starts strong and they say, well, we don't want to get off a winning horse. So those two teams, which could end up playing for the NFC Championship, are where I'm most interested. What do you think about the Philadelphia situation?
Well, yeah, Mitch... Nick Foles, to me, is one of the great football stories of all time, because we had seen him succeed in Philadelphia, then we had seen him fail other places, and then in the biggest game of his life, he went toe-to-toe with the greatest quarterback of all time, and if you didn't know which one was the immortal that day, you would have been hard-pressed to decide. They win the Super Bowl. They deliver the Lombardi Trophy to Philadelphia. I thought, you know, it gets back to the Jalen Hurts Tagovailoa thing, okay? I thought they might try to trade him and get a lot for him. They decided to hold on to him. And I'm not wary of Carson Wentz's condition, but man, oh man, this is a significant thing that they don't think he's ready for contact yet. And I realize it's not even been a full year since he got injured, but it is now going to be interesting to see. There were not great, even though it was a Super Bowl, nobody knew what to expect from Foles last February. Now the spotlight is squarely on him, and it was Dizzy Gillespie, the old jazz man, who said, the professional is the one who can do it again. At least in the short run, now Nick Foles is being asked to do it again.
Yeah. They play Atlanta Thursday night, and then Tampa Bay, Indianapolis at home, Tennessee on the road. the Falcons notwithstanding, because I don't know what team we're going to get on Thursday night with Atlanta. Those are all winnable games for Philadelphia. And if Nick Foles comes out hot and wins two or three of those before Carson Wentz is deemed okay, are you gonna stop playing Nick Foles to put Carson Wentz in? He only won you a Super Bowl, and if it comes out of the gate 3-0, really, in Philadelphia?
I know, it's great.
In Philadelphia? I don't know.
But let's not forget how good Wentz was. But meanwhile, question for you gentlemen, will success spoil Doug Peterson, who was very testy yesterday?
What? He pulled a football coach getting testy? What?
He pulled the Saban on people in his post. There's a little tension there, and there is going to be tension over that issue when Wentz is ready. But right now he doesn't have to, you know. But something was going on with the media yesterday, and not good. So if they're coming off a Super Bowl, and if things should be a ordinarily, you know, it'd be, you know, kumbaya, but not really. And part of the reason is that the questions are going to be coming to him just as they are to Nick Saban about the quarterback. It's an analogous situation, in theory, simply because we're talking about two capable quarterbacks in each circumstance.
I want to take advantage of having both of you here since, again, being in Detroit, the NFL is frequently not played on Sundays in Detroit. We just see some version of it. But in New York,
you are so bitter about your sports teams.
It's been a long time,
so
Michael.
Ugly. It's
Michael,
just it's a dark.
Look at this. Look at this panel. Okay, how many Super Bowl stories have you gotten to write about your home team? Plenty. Look at Bob Ryan. How many Super Bowls does he get to write about for his home team in New England? It's boring for him already. Okay, I'm sticking around in my job just to wait to see if the Lions could even get to the playoffs.
No, but here's the thing: you are one of the most. You're not only one of the best people we know, but you're one of the most positive people we know. And then you start talking about your hometown teams, and you go to such a dark place.
Well, hey, Mike, I'm trying to find the light.
This is a guy who had to live through a playoff game in which his team lost 5-0.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Bob.
You can't relate to that. I can't. That's right. But it happened.
That's right. So my question to my two esteemed colleagues who have the benefit geographically of doing far better than I do in NFL football.
Sure.
First of all, the Giants, they really do. Bob's point is really interesting about Eli Manning, but with Saquon Barkley and all that, there's a lot of talk about them being contenders again. Given what's happened particularly last year, are they making that big a leap? Are they really going to compete for the NFC East and be a force in the playoffs that quickly?
I don't see them, whether it's Foles or Wentz, being in the same league with the Philadelphia Eagles. Start there. They have to play. They have to put 11 guys. It's like I'll use a Ryan variation of a Ryan thing. They are required to put 11 defensive players on the field when they don't have the ball, Mitch. It's a rule. Saquon Barkley is not going to play defense. Eli Manning, Ingram, the tight end, is not. And Odell Beckham Jr. is. Yes, I think we keep talking about with the Giants. They are making a big bet on two things. They are making a bet that a guy who may be a transformative running back can transform an offense that's already got some weapons to begin with. But the bigger bet is that he can be enough of a difference maker for a 37-year-old quarterback. Now, maybe Eli will still be playing at Tom Brady's age and playing at a very high level. Off of what we saw last year, it's hard to say that, except it's hard to judge him fairly off around that offense and the coach that he started the year with. I don't see them as being a Super Bowl contender this year. And I grew up in upstate New York. I've been a Giants fan my whole life. I don't see it. And Mitch, we keep coming back to this, and we can talk about another quarterback because he's going to face your team. Okay. If the Jets turn out to be right about Sam Darnold, I'll die on this hill. The Giants were wrong not to take him.
Interesting.
Yep. And they dug in him this week, by the way, from what I've been reading. John Mara, in a very lengthy interview.
Saw it.
Yep. With the New York People. He dug in, you know, on defending it and saying, we felt Barkley was the best player on the board, period. We didn't like Darnold, yada, yada. So he stuck up for Gettleman, he stuck up for everybody, and they're digging in, so we'll see.
Well, not to go to that dark place again, Mike, Sam Darnold against the Detroit Lions defense. He's going to have a very nice night on Monday if their preseason
is that bad? Is the Lions defense that bad?
The Lions defense is really bad.
But they have a defensive guru as their head coach now.
Yeah, well, I think he's still figuring out how to be an NFL head coach.
Before we leave the Giants and their quarterback situation, okay, here's the thing that, and I've known John Mara since we were in college together. Okay, here's the thing that somebody should have asked him, and it is this. Are you really under the impression that you can get a star young quarterback anytime you want one? Because they were set up to pick out of any four or five guys in this draft. And again, we're gonna find out. Let me ask you one more question about quarterbacks. If he can stay on the field this year, does Aaron Rodgers have a chance to make it back to the Super Bowl?
Well, that
because I think he does. I think he does.
That has more to do with the rest of their team has been evidenced over the years. There's no question anymore about Aaron Rodgers. There's no question about what he can do, even limited. He's remarkable. But too often, all conversations about the Green Bay Packers start and end with Aaron Rodgers, and the defense ends up being the thing that lets them down. And I just don't know if they've fixed that situation. I don't know if they're going to be able to dominate on that side of the ball. They, you know, for years they just walked through their division.
Yes.
And so you could basically just pencil them in. But now they've got Minnesota. And you're not a lock if you don't win the NFC Central to necessarily go to the playoffs. Green Bay did it for many years with records that, weren't necessarily better than the second place finisher in some of the other divisions. Now they got to take on Minnesota. So are they going to make the playoffs? Yeah, if you ask me today. Are they going to do a Super Bowl? I don't know. I keep waiting for...
That coach is coaching for his job in Green Bay, I believe, this year. And again, Mitch, when you talk about their defense, what stopped Mike McCarthy from building a great defense? That they absolutely should have won more than they have won in the prime of a great quarterback's career.
Yeah. That's always a thing with Aaron Rodgers. You know, as great as he is, one Super Bowl win and... You know, a window that's closing even under, you know, as great as he is. I don't know. I don't know. That's a really, really good question. And remember last year they were 7-9, and he does get nicked. He's not Superman anymore. Aaron Rodgers, you know, a collarbone has felled him multiple times now. I would not bet all my money on them making it through a whole season with him healthy and with their defense. What do you think, Bob?
No, that certainly is. But that's any quarterback. But you're right. They need to have a quality backup. And I'm not too crazy about them. Anymore. I think a window's closed.
It's closed, really, Bobby?
Pretty much, yeah. I'd be very surprised if they emerged out of the pack this year. If anybody's going to emerge out of the pack, a team once removed, and that's Atlanta. That's a team I would put the most money on. Mm-hmm. Other than
I think the Packers are going to go to the Super Bowl, but I think that every year. Wow. Okay, let's just spend a brief moment on. Let me ask. All right, I'll start with Mitch, and then Bob. I'll throw the same question to you. Are you more interested right now in a really fun race in the National League West, or what is turning into a pretty interesting race for the first wild card in the American League between the New York Yankees and the, pick a number, 65 million, 66, 68 million Oakland A's?
I'd be totally disingenuous and to say that I'm not more interested in what happens with the Yankees, just because you just cannot help it due to the tethering of these two cities, the one I live in and that city. So yeah, and all the history and all the sports and all that stuff. But I am curious about the NL West, because I love the idea that there are three teams and you can put the handkerchief, forget the blanket, over them right now. And they're going back and forth. The Rockies took care of their business last night in an incredibly dramatic fashion against the Giants. And the Dodgers are going to roll, and we know there's some arms and some stuff going on in Atlanta. That's a fascinating race out there in the NL West.
It's
no
great.
Question.
It's yeah. great.
There are a lot of great storylines. The LA-Arizona series was really good. And the Rockies are – I keep wondering how they're doing it, but they're doing it. But having said all that, you know, we look forward to a 7-game series at the end of most sports to determine who's going to be the championship. This year, I'm looking forward to a single game that's going to be played, on a Tuesday or whatever?
Yeah. Between
you know, one of the richest teams in baseball, if not the richest, and someone who's doing it with spit and glue to determine if they're going to go on in the playoffs. I mean, you might as well pencil it in now. Unless there's some dramatic turn of events in the West, that's going to be the one
game. And now the question, Mitch, is where is it going to be?
Right. But even that, I mean, that's secondary to the fact that it's going to be. There's going to be, at the end of that Tuesday or whatever game it is, whatever day it is, one team's going home after one game.
It's crazy. Mitch, the A's are 28-14 over their last 42 games. It's the best record over a quarter of the season in the entire sport. And here's the thing about the Yankees. As sketchy as they have looked lately, and Bob, I'll throw this to you. They might play a 5-game series against the Boston Red Sox, who have some serious pitching issues right now. And if they do, and even if the Red Sox have won 110 games, to me, that's a pick'em series.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you mentioned the pitching. It's everything for the Red Sox. It's the whole story. We do not know what state they will be in the pitching department when the playoffs start right now. We do not know. And if they had to go in it without Chris Sale and David Price, or with the impaired guy of those two, and we're throwing out there as the ace of the staff, the utterly unreliable Rick Porcello, who I don't care if he won a Cy Young or not, Nathan Eovaldi, Brian Johnson. Come on, no. There's no question now. If they've got a healthy Sale that they've been trying to, you know, get ready to, and if they got a healthy Price, when it starts, they're question marks. Neither one has performed well. As Price has a history of being bullpen in the playoffs a little bit, but no start. He's a terrible starter, and Sale did not live up to it last year. Yeah, it's unresolved, no question. Not to mention, Mike, the idea that if the Yankees are whole, I mean, Judge is finally swinging a bat. If he's the difference between him in the lineup and not in the lineup, the numbers are stark. It's amazing. He is disproportionately important to any compared to anybody else in that lineup. It's the numbers prove it. And if they, if Sanchez ever came back and was useful, but nonetheless, their lineup fully constructed is still fearsome.
What's great about this, Mike and Bob, is that in horse racing terms, you know, frequently with sports being so thick and on top of one another, we're only interested in the home stretch and the photo finish. This baseball season, the jockeying around the back end to get into position for the home stretch has been fascinating. You know, I don't remember a year like this, what we're seeing with the NL West and like what we've seen with Oakland and Seattle and Houston pushing each other around and the Yankees chasing Boston, that August held so much intrigue to set up September. And we're going to be talking about this on this podcast every single time we do it, because it just is so interesting.
And Mitch, look at the guys who have moved. Look, the Yankees in the last, 4 weeks have added two starting pitchers, a starting shortstop from another team, a former MVP in Andrew McCutchen, and a guy who was a Cy Young candidate as a closer about 20 minutes ago, Zach Britton. The Dodgers pick up Manny Machado, and of all those guys, of all those guys, and even the way Daniel Murphy has been such a great addition for the Cubs, you know who the biggest deal is right now? A 34-year-old change-up pitcher, 10 years removed from being a World Series MVP, and that is Cole Hamels, who kind of refuses to give up earned runs every time he pitches for the Cubs.
Yeah. Well, Cubs-Red Sox looms out there as, you know, as the big, like movie season, the big blockbuster that's coming at Christmas. And you just can't wait to see it if it materializes. And that hovers over all of this stuff, which is interesting on the lower levels. It's just a great, fascinating
baseball
season.
Look out for the Dodgers. The only problem the Dodgers had to stop their momentum last night is, Bob, they kind of ran into the greatest pitcher of all time, Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, my God. Jacob DeGrom, for those who don't know, set a record or tied a record. Tied a record of 25 consecutive starts, 3 earned runs or fewer. And is having a season for the ages without the W's to justify it. And is still very much in contention for a Cy Young. He could be in contention for a Cy Young with a 500 record or less. That's how amazing.
Mitch, he's such a good pitcher. It's amazing the Tigers didn't give him away.
Give us a chance. If we had had him, we'd have given him away.
All right,
and we'd have given him to the Red Sox.
All right, before we get to our parting shots, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Away. Now, Mitch, listen up, because one day you're going to have a piece of luggage
one
from
day.
These people.
Yeah,
Away was founded by two friends from New York who found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea, luggage with power. Thus, the Away carry-on was born. It really is the perfect luggage. Inspired by true travel stories, we asked thousands of people how they pack, why they travel, and what bugs them most about their luggage. Then we designed a bag that solved a few old problems like sticky wheels and a few new ones like dead cell phones. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman, in this case, Mitch Albom. You can choose from a variety of colors and 4 sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or, oh, wait for it, the large for extended stays. All suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength, weight, and impact. The interior features a patent-pending compression system helpful for overpackers. 4 360-degree spinner wheels. That's right, spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. The TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft, and a removable, washable laundry bag keeps dirty clothes separate from clean. Do you think I'm done here? Oh, no, I'm not nearly done. Both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, and anything else that's powered by a USB cord. So that, Mitch, somebody who wants to read, the next person you meet in heaven when it comes out shortly, if they won't get caught short if they've got a delayed flight.
And there's Thank you for working my book into the read.
Did I work in one of mine? No. No, I did not. And there's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, we will fix or replace it for you for life. Away also offers a 100-day trial. This is like a Netflix binge-watching commercial. Live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Away's carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, and you can maximize the amount you can pack. If you're in town, please be sure to visit Away at their retail store in New York City. I have one, okay? And well, I had it until my daughter grabbed it the minute she saw it. It charges her cell phone, so she doesn't have to worry about having a dead phone while traveling. The material is sleek, extra durable. Interior design helps keep items neat and organized, easy to carry up and downstairs because it's so lightweight. I'm getting tired just carrying this read. And now our listeners get $20 off a suitcase. All you have to do is go to awaytravel.com/sportsreporters and use promo code sportsreporters during checkout. It's that simple. So again, $20 off a suitcase. Mitch, you're going to get one of these days by visiting awaytravel.com/sportsreporters and using promo code sportsreporters during checkout. Time for our party shots. Wow. Bob Ryan goes first.
Bryson DeChambeau, oh, how I love saying that, just won the Dell Technologies Tournament. Congratulations! The fact is, it could have been any one of 100, no, 200, no, 300 people. No sport is more unpredictable or egalitarian than golf. The difference between whoever is the currently ranked number one in golf and the 100th guy on the web.com tour is frighteningly small. Some people downplay golf. It's not a sport. It's a game. You've all heard it. The fact is, it's an amazingly precise and competitive sport, one that countless other noted professional athletes wish they could play at a high level. Now, to me, the dumbest question anyone can ask in sports is, who do you think will win this week? The margin of error is infinitesimal. How the hell do I know? Or anyone. Long live golf, I say. P.S., yes, I know DeChambeau has won two in a row. That's why I don't bet.
It's always interesting to note the career arcs of Roger Federer and Tiger Woods, who both were once on their way to winning more majors than any man in their sports had ever won. It was Dan Jenkins who famously once said before Tiger's fateful trip down the driveway that Thanksgiving night about a decade ago that the only things that could stop him were injury or a bad marriage. Then Tiger had both. And then he wasn't going to break Jack Nicklaus's record the way Federer not only beat Pete Sampras's record of 14 majors, but ended up with 21. 14, by the way, is the number of majors on which Tiger is still stuck. Yesterday, both Federer and Woods were in play. Federer, as we've discussed, got upset at the Open, one of the worst upsets of his career, to a far younger man. And once again, Tiger made a run at a golf tournament, but wasn't good enough to beat a kid named Bryson DeChambeau. It's interesting, though, in light of the renaissance in the late innings that Federer has had over the last couple of years, at least until the past 7 months, all of a sudden, Tiger looks like he might be a better bet to win one more big one than Fed is.
Before we give out any Congressional Medals of Honor to Nike for using Colin Kaepernick in a commercial, let's remember they are in the business of selling product, period. Nike is not now and has never been the conscience of America. It has been paying Kaepernick since 2011 and all through his unfair ban from football. Kaepernick reportedly earned and will earn millions from this deal, including an upcoming clothing line. So when the new Nike ad says, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything, well, there are men of principle in prison around the world who might think millions of dollars in a clothing line isn't exactly sacrificing everything. This has nothing to do with Kaepernick's treatment by the NFL, which is deplorable. It has everything to do with a shoe company that's become filthy rich, acting as if it's a champion of the American conscience. Wrong. If it was, it might have dropped Kobe Bryant when he raped a woman in Colorado, or Tiger Woods when he trashed his reputation with serial infidelity. But Nike does what's good for Nike. It puts its players on the bench until it's convenient for them to sell image again, then pushes them forward saying they believe, they believe, they believe. There's a reason Kaepernick wasn't seen in Nike ads over the last 2 years before this new campaign, which by Nike's own admission is aimed at 15 to 17-year-olds. You know, a good age to be naive. That's going to wrap things up for today's Sports Reporters podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, except when we do it on Tuesdays, like today after holidays. But we will be back on Friday doing it all over again. If you like what you heard, you can leave us a comment. If you didn't like what you heard, you can leave us a comment. And you can tell your friends they can get this if they're interested in finding the Sports Reporters 2.0 after the TV version right here on Mondays and Fridays, wherever you get popular podcasts. Until we see you in a few days to set up the big NFL weekend, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a terrific day.
Someday the Lions will win a Super Bowl, Mitch.